Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 113. Continuing our pockets of ADP analysis for you, going picks 200 to 250, according to NFBC OCs, which you will need if you want to beat the proper analyst. All right, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at Ryan VHQ. Ryan, how are we doing tonight?
Well done. Good intro. I like that one. Doing fantastic. We just picked our KDS slots for Tout Wars on Tuesday night, and I got the second pick, and you've got the sixth. Sixth pick.
Yes. Sixth pick.
So we'll be that'll make, I think, for good theater for our live stream, which will start at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 Pacific, on March 5th on Tuesday. But then we're also not like right next to each other, because we did have Tout Wars does it. I kind of like this rule where it's basically based on the previous year standings as your KDS the following year. So I think we both finished second in our leagues. Sorry to bring that one back up since you lost in the last like 20 minutes. But yeah. But we had the second and third KDS. I was selfish and took second, probably taking Juan Soto. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of had to take one for the team and space out a little bit. So I appreciate it.
Yep. My message, Bloomfield, the second we got the email, I said, hey, if you're taking second, then I'll take something for farther back. All the way at the end. I've told everybody enough how I hate the ends and 15s, but I'll go in the middle, leave this little breathing room to talk and give you guys a very entertaining show, because the responses from our live draft shows have been pretty cool. So and this one will be a fun one once again, because this is the first live draft where we're going head to head.
I don't think we've ever done one. Yeah. We've been in a ton of leagues together, but it's like draft and holds. And I don't think we've ever streamed one together in the same draft.
Hopefully we have a show that Thursday. Let's put it that way.
I'm pretty sure we will. It doesn't get too brutal. You're already talking a little bit too much trash last show, but.
Yeah, we'll see. I have to. That's who I am. So the only way I can, I got to win at something, because like you said last time, you win at golf every year. So, that'll be Tuesday night, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, right here. Might start a few minutes, really depends on when we get the official start time for the draft. That's all kind of iffy here and there, but we'll get you guys covered by 3.5 hour show or so to have some fun on a Tuesday. But other things, this is a Thursday night recording. On Wednesday evening, Ryan wrapped up League 4 for Bubba and the Bloom. So that was pretty fun, the auction leagues. Any thoughts on that?
It was tough. Everyone in the room knows who we like and don't like, and you could kind of tell throughout the auction. Had a fantastic time, though. I think everyone else did. In the room, and really, like, I don't know, I feel like running these four leagues, because this was the last of our four, was it was a little bit of work to get everything, you know, set up and logistics and surveys for times and stuff like that. But I thought it was really worth it. Like, it was really cool to be able to kind of chat with listeners throughout the auction. A couple of them we streamed, Mariko streamed, and then you streamed your first one. So it was a ton of fun. I still like, I don't know. I'm still, auctions are tough. I'm trying to compare, because I'm so used to drafts. Like, I don't think I'm that good at auctions. I certainly don't have the experience.
Okay, I think it's an experience thing.
I don't know. A comfortability with trying to shape your team. It's kind of, to me, it's a little bit, and I'll give you the floor in a sec, but it's a little bit of a blessing and a curse with an auction versus a draft. Like, I enjoy the process of a straight draft, of kind of knowing that before the draft, I can kind of map out and kind of start to figure out what my team's going to look like before. And I don't have to worry, say I have the 10th, 12th pick. Like, yeah, it kind of sucks I don't have a chance at Acuna, but I don't have to worry about a bunch of the early player pool. Whereas an auction, you need to be prepared for every single situation. Honestly, I don't think I was. That's also a benefit, though, because and you'll probably get into this, because you really enjoyed the auctions. You can do whatever the hell you want, build your team how you want to. So to me, it's kind of two sides of it. I'm just not as, I don't think, as comfortable with it yet, but still, it was a blast.
Like, one of the bigger takeaways is, and you, I think you're talking about it on Twitter today, it's like the Captain Hindsight thing. You'll be in on a player and you think you're doing the right thing, And then you see like things kind of happen like an hour later in the auction or whatever. And you're thinking, dang, like I totally could have done this differently. And there was a lot of that. And it's like the first draft I did, I kind of made a point to be more balanced. And I kind of was for the most part. The second one, I was just free flowing. Like I had Freeman and Trey Turner and Bryce Harper. So technically like three first round picks and then Ozzie Albies. I was just going full bore, not intentionally. It just kind of kept falling that way and it worked out. And so then you're doing more of a stars and scrubs approach. I had kind of two different auctions and it's fun, but it's like you said, is you could never do that in a snake draft. You're kind of prepping for this, that, and the other. And then it is interesting because you might think, okay, I'm looking in the auction. Okay, I'm looking at the player pool. I need to get a second baseman. But no second baseman gets put up there for like 30 minutes. But all these other guys that, you know, you still need three pitchers and all these guys are interesting. But now it just took me
out. Ooh, I want him. Ooh, I want him.
Now it just took me out of the second basemans I could have had. Because now I have to lower my like, it's just a whole just wave of emotions. And just like you said, in an auction, you know, you could have your different, you know, tools on your screens that you like to use and all these things, and you kind of flow and kind of go in an auction. You tried, you said, nope. I literally have my paper, barely ever referenced it once we got going. Cause the good thing about the NFBC software, the AAVs are up there and everything. And if you trust the numbers, which they're pretty solid numbers, you at least have a ballpark in what you want to do. One of the takeaways for me always was, and some of it's just price dependent. You're kind of stuck with what you have is, in an auction, I've noticed batting average is very difficult to kind of get those guys to build. That's why I was happy to get like a Freeman, a Harper, a Turner, and an Albies. Like those are four relatively good batting average guys, because in the first one where we're balanced, you're almost throwing up batting average out the window at that point. Like so I'm not saying you have to go stars and scrubs, but again, I'm no expert, just two drafts. But it really made me feel like you need to get one or two of the kind of not big, big guys, but at least like a close to like a $30 to $40 guys, that kind of thing. And that's why I kind of want to do more. I'm really curious about it. Talked to Ben Titt a lot about it because he's got his coming up and he's really excited for his first ever auction. And there's just a lot of different ways to do it. That's the beauty of it, I think.
The hindsight thing you mentioned, I think, is huge. Cause I was talking to Ben on Twitter today. And cause I took Mookie Betts at $43. And that's, I think it was a dollar below his average. That's a whole other thing. The top like 10 to 12 players in the NFBC auctions are all $40 players, which to me, I don't think I've seen that before. But later on in the auction, that middle tier was pretty soft. And this, maybe just this one room, whatever, as to where your boy, Randy Rosarena and Adolis Garcia combined went for less than Mookie Betts. And I'm like, oh, if I knew that, you know, the beginning of the auction, I think I'd rather have those two and not have a dollar player at the end. But you don't have that hindsight as you're going. So much depends on it. It's so hard to look at. And we've got labor and tout auctions coming up, labor auctions this weekend. It's very deceptive to just look at an auction board and say, oh, I'd rather have this guy for $2 less than that guy. So much depends on the timing of when these guys were brought up. I found, at least in the NFBC, at least in the two auctions that I did, I felt like going for those like second, third round batters made a lot more sense than going stars and scrubs to me, at least, just because, again, those top 12 bats were all $40 players. And I started Betts 43, Olson 35 or whatever, and I was just hamstrung after that.
Yeah. I remember I logged in about an hour and a half, 2 hours into Ryan's last night, and I just texted him and I said, hey, you know, you need to get some of this and this, but you only have like $40. So what's the plan, buddy?
That was encouraging. Appreciated that.
You did the same thing to me in the home before. So
yeah, you had like $30 and no outfielders left. Yeah. So
which you did too. And that's one thing Ben said. He said, out of all the positions in the auction, the outfield position might be the best one to go scrubby on if you have to, because, and I agreed with them when we started talking about it, because if you look at scrubs, like say second base compared to scrubs in the outfield, much more production in the outfield, stuff along those lines. And that's just kind of learning the auction pool in a roundabout way. I looked at some other things now that make me want to, again, try one more auction, like not have a full on like list of players, but you kind of have a cheat sheet and you can do a statistical cheat sheet. So now you know like what stats you want to go for and what price range. It's in depth, but there's a few different websites that will provide those for you if you put the right formatting in that even I can figure it out. So that might be a little more. It almost looks like Andy Reid's play sheet. It's like color coded and everything. That's kind of more my wheelhouse.
So you're in for a third. So you're in for a third.
Oh, most likely. I've already told you I'm thinking about one of those. I'm thinking about a main event qualifier. I still have my three OCs. Got Tout Wars. Like, I'm just a glutton for fab punishment. But man, draft season's the best. Like we always say, draft season is the best fantasy drug out there, I think. And it's just a matter of maintaining for 6 months afterwards.
Kevin in the chat with the Oregon Duck avatar.
That threw me off for a second. I thought it was Scott for a second.
Sco Ducks. Strongly recommend managing a predetermined budget during the auction. That is huge. Manage, you know, kind of map out hitter and pitcher, know your hitter pitcher split and kind of go through. I want, you know, whatever it is, I want two $25 guys. I want, and you can even do it by position. I don't really recommend that. I just did it by hitters and pitchers.
Again, that's smarter.
Not the expert.
No, but, it's smarter.
You can kind of pigeonhole yourself if you say, oh, I want a $13 first baseman.
And yeah, exactly.
Only like three of those guys. So
yeah, and then if you get one of the guys you wanted to get him for, you know, $8, now you have $5 more. Where are you gonna allocate that while you're on the clock still? So it's just easier to put it to hitters and pitchers.
Yeah. So I don't know. We could probably talk the whole episode about the auction, but I'm super glad we did it. Thank you to everyone. The 56. Trademark.
The original 56.
Original 56 who joined in with us. It was, I think it met our objective, which was to introduce listeners and ourselves to the auction format on the NFBC at a low price point where we're kind of, you know, feeling our way out. And I think we accomplished that. I did, actually, before I do that, any final?
Yeah, real quick, before you pull that sheet up.
Yep.
I do want to say again, like it's, Ryan and I, probably people think like we're kind of corny at times talking about it, but we always talk about we do the show for the people. That's kind of the whole point of this. It was really cool seeing the excitement behind it for the original 56, like the DMs we got, the Twitter things, like people were all about it. And that's kind of like, okay, like Ryan said, it was kind of a weird hassle, especially with things taking place with the NFC, like at the last minute and everything, to kind of get it all put together. But once it all happened, and literally, like, I told Ryan, like, when I finished my first one, I had, like, three DMs within 10 minutes of the draft being done. Like, people were just pumped to be in it. It's awesome. And I've already had, like, a handful of people asking if we'd start a fifth one.
League five? Here we go.
I said, no, it's not fair to the other original 56. But it basically makes me think we're going to have five or six next year. Because I don't know why we wouldn't keep doing this. I guess it should be maybe a yearly thing, I'm thinking. We might not be able to be in all of them if it gets too big. That's one thing I'll commit to right now. At least for Ryan's sake, maybe I will, but for Ryan's sake, but I have a feeling this will be bigger next year, and I'm pretty pumped on that, and it's all because of you guys, so thank you for that.
Yeah, that thought was entering my head as you started talking was, we probably run this back in
I don't see why we would, unless something really strange happens, yes.
Yeah. Kevin Hastings in the chat, what's up, Kevin? Auction was a blast. Kevin, you sniped me on Michael Garcia today in TGFBI, by the way.
Real quick, before you finish, I'll let you finish reading this. Kevin was in my first league, I think. Second league, I don't remember. Oh, the league I didn't have any outfielders in. So Kevin didn't have any outfielders either, but he had all the money left. So at, I think, our second break, I get a DM from Kevin going, hey, what outfielders do you want? Because I'll take them. And like basically that kind of like, hey, we're both looking for outfielders. We were talking. I'm like, oh, this is good. This is good. This is what it's all about.
Potential collusion is what I'm hearing between.
Because he's basically saying I'm going to take them from you. Like, because I can buy them all.
Kevin says, had heard it was great, but was a bit hesitant after previous online auctions. Time for $150 one now. That's right.
There you
took the gateway drug. Roger Bloomfield in the chat. The auctions were really fun. Frustrating, exhilarating, and suicidal at the same time. So that's a range of
Papa Bloom
throughout. And then Kevin Michael Garcia, who I took last night for $9, which was way too much. But that leads into, so I did promise our my draft room last night that I would throw this together. And as I try and click and talk at the same time.
You had it up there earlier. There you go.
Here we go. So what I did was I took the NFBC AAV, average auction value, from their February auctions, and just compared that to the four Bub and the Bloom auctions and looked at the difference. If anyone wants a copy of this, I believe I tweeted it out earlier, but if anyone wants a copy of this, I'll shoot you the link. It's just an online Google sheet. And then I took the four auctions that were, you know, and the price for each player in those. And one of the comments that we got back from Twitter was like, this is basically a Bubba in the Bloom target and fade list,
which is pretty close. Yeah.
At the top is Emmett Sheehan. This is algebra 101. That's not truly an average. If we took the median or something of Emmett Sheehan, there was a $20 bid at the end of one of the auctions to not run out of money. So that kind of skewed things. But familiar names, right? Freddie Freeman, who's been like my first round target, average at 45 in our auctions, 42 for the other NFPCs. And then two of your guys, Ohapi and Fott.
That's hilarious to me. Like, unbelievable. Yeah.
And it was funny in the auction, my auction, you weren't even in the damn league. Ohapi was nominated in the first round and someone chatted, "We sure Bubba's not in this league?"
That's funny.
So a few others. Logan Webb went
Real quick, I'll give it back. I'm just happy because you have each date on there, and I'm looking because I got Fott and Harper on the February. I got the cheapest price on both of them somehow. I'm pretty pumped on that one.
Yeah.
In the same draft.
And so an example of that, let's look at Christopher Sanchez.
Oh, yeah. Bloomfield's fine. Your two drafts versus my two.
Christopher Sanchez has an average auction value of $5 in the NFPC. I think that's a great freaking buy. Our intelligent listeners average for $8. But not only that, in the two auctions that I was in, the first February 19th and the last February 28th, Christopher Sanchez went for $9 and $10. I don't think that's by coincidence. In your auctions, he went for $4 and $7.
That's
so
awesome.
So it was funny to see that play out. For I think at the time that my first auction, Sanchez was a $4 average value and he went for $10.
That's so great.
That's the kind of stuff I was putting up with.
Yep.
Do we want to flip to there any other names? Or there is Michael Garcia, who we've been big on, and Kevin Hastings, who we just had in the chat and was in your league.
$11 in one of my leagues. $11
went for 11 years. I took him for $9 last night. It was one of those shocker. I needed a third baseman late, and I decided to pay up. But
scroll to Michael Harris there, because that's one we've talked about a lot for second round batting average.
Yep.
Look at those numbers, like all of them, just boom, 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 boom.
Yep, we paid a premium. A little bit.
Your boy Pablo.
There's Pablo. A little disappointed. Pablo only went for $2 on average more than the.
William
the average.
William.
There's William Contreras plus two. Like, it's crazy. Thyro Estrada, Jake Berger, like Bo Naylor. I mean, all these guys.
It is a Bubba target and fade. Yeah, flip it to the other side.
It's unbelievable. Flip it to the other side. Let's see.
This is comical. I hope you guys are enjoying this because I'm finding this very.
Yeah, I don't know if this makes for good podcasting or not, especially if you weren't in the auction league. But I think it's pretty interesting. And so there are some injured guys like Boz and Verlander,
Ellie,
Esteri Ruiz, who we obviously are fades on. Dylan Cease, we stay far, far away. We've been very negative about Aaron Judge at the price and Ellie as well. Those guys are all $3 to $4 cheaper than the average. Ellie De La Cruz went for as low as $23 in your second auction compared to an average of 28. So actually Ellie was the first throw in my auction last night and went for 24. That's a pretty cool first nomination.
Really find out who has the moxie right out the gate.
Yep. So
that's fun. That's
anyway, I figured I'd throw this through that some more. Yeah, throw this together and kind of see what names come up. Yeah, interesting that Zach Geloff, the listeners agree with me. Our great Geloff debate.
That $5 Geloff's a nice little late second baseman, because that second base pool, especially in this auction, felt like it dried up a lot.
I remember that last night. That's it was one of those that just kind of slipped through. As the old Trevor Story $3.
Pull up Trevor Story. Let's see how much he went for in every other league but yours, first one.
First one he went for $3, then $7, $8, $10.
Okay, so he went up by the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. The $3 went out the gate, and that's all my fault. I know. I'm very aware of that. Look at Jonathan India went in for $0 and one. That's good. That's my first one.
Zero, if they didn't get drafted or whatever. Yeah, didn't get thrown. So
that's awesome. That is some fun stuff, at least in my mind. It's very
anyway. Yeah, if anyone was in the leagues and wants to see where their guys went compared to others, or even if you weren't in the leagues and want to check this out, hit me up.
Yep, pretty good stuff there. Before we head off the auction, Gialdi says NFBC auctions are amazing. They were. I'm a big fan. Big fan of it. It is a, you remember, as Wilder or somebody else in one of my auctions, when it was all done, basically said they're mentally exhausted. It was like a mental marathon of just going nonstop, yeah. Which way yes. different, like to like kind of bring it all the way to the front, way different than a snake draft where you can kind of sit there and plan it and wait for your turns and kind of pick your poison because you only have a certain block of players to go off of type thing. Yeah, big difference.
Snake draft, you can... Yeah, go to the bathroom. You're not missing really, anything.
If you're on the end of a 15, you can like literally go make dinner, yeah, come back.
Yeah, like, just no. I guess we should throw out there because you had made the comment on your first, and maybe your first auction was just the longest one. Yours went like 4.5 hours, but what we saw really by the end, they were going 4 hours.
Yeah, with the reserves. Well done.
With the reserves. So like it's an extra half hour over a snake draft, and the NFBC gave us 2 5-minute breaks after the 7th round and the 17th, and then you got a 2-minute break before the
15th.
Okay. Mine was 6. I think they just adjusted.
Okay, yeah.
So you do get perfect. Like 5 minutes to do whatever.
Go to the bathroom, breathe. Rehydrate. Yeah. I literally got up and walked around my house, the one I wasn't streaming, just like stretch out for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good, though. The only thing I will say, I know we can, again, can talk about this forever, I don't know. I still would not feel comfortable going to, like, say, labor and sitting there at a table with an auction, just all the papers in front of me. That'd be tough.
Oh, but it's A, so much more fun, but it's also a lot slower, the live ones.
I could see that being the case.
It's not just a computer knocking out nominations. You still have a fast pace, but your live auctions are just by nature with humans. And not a computer running it. They are slower, so you do have a little bit of time in between. And a lot of times, like if a bid gets won, there's some back and forth about the guy at the end. So you do have a little bit more time, kind of in between nominations on a live thing. So
makes sense. All right, again, talk about it forever, but let's move on to our pockets of ADP. Where it is our third episode here. We're talking 200 to 250 according to the OC format. And you said it before the show, it's a little more even hitter pitchers compared to last episode, which was much more hitter dominant, it felt like. So what are you seeing from your takeaways? Let's start on the hitter side of things, Bloomfield. What are we seeing takeaway-wise on the hitter side?
I am seeing, yes, you're right, more pitchers going, to not answer your question, more pitchers going than we saw in the last few buckets.
So we're good at this. FSWA nominated, by the way.
Yeah, we just ignore each other and basically talk about whatever we want to. So that's probably why we didn't win.
Hey, Bird.
The hitter side. I have kind of notoriously waited on outfield for whatever reason early in drafts, and I've had to make up for it. And I think this part of the draft is a nice spot to make up for it. You've got a good number of outfielders, and you've got outfielders that I think are still pretty strong. So you've got Tyler O'Neill, Jared Kelnick, Starling Marte. I like all three of those guys. Lars Nootbaar, Varsho. If you need some power speed, you've got Stephen Kwan, who's an average guy. Taylor Ward, we'll talk about. You've got Lourdes Gurriel, we'll talk about. There's just a lot of, and I did this in labor, a lot of options to be able, you can grab two or three of these outfielders. That's what I did in labor. I think rounds 14 through 16 took three in a row. And I think you can make up for if you need outfield, you just went elsewhere early in drafts. This is a decent spot to make up for it. There is still some speed available. Like there's still some green as we show these on the YouTube stream. We've got 10 hitters projected for more than 10 steals. And they're not just rabbits. Nobody's projected for over 25. Starling Marte is the only one. The aforementioned Michael Garcia is in here. You can get speed this late in the draft and not have it compromise. Like, yes, these guys all have warts going outside the past 200, but like a Michael Garcia, you can get a good batting average with it. A Starling Marte, you can get a good batting average. Shelton Varsho, you can get a bad batting average, but also some power with it. So you can grab some speed at this point. And the last kind of note that I had on the pitcher side, power is starting to wane. We talked on Tuesday about all of the power bats that were available in the 150 to 200 pocket, even though it may cost you in batting average. There's not much power. The top power projected guy at 25 homers is Byron Buxton. I think Byron Buxton's middle nickname is the under. Take the under on that.
To be fair, I could see Captain Jack getting over 25, Isak get over 25. But yeah, it's an interesting range. I agree with the outfielders. I have a lot of shares of about three or four of these outfielders in this range. So I'm with you there. I do think it's interesting. Like, I remember last episode, the hitters, like, batting average was kind of not available. You have a lot more of it here. Not a ton, but more of it here than you did previously. Yep. Maybe not the big powers, but a lot of 20 home run guys, which is still at this point in the draft very palatable. And then a bunch of your 10 stolen base guys, like you mentioned. So it's a good kind of probably get 3.5 to 4 category players still to fill out your roster type thing. If it's either positional wise, like Ryan was talking about the outfielders that he needs, or if you need to look, there's some middle infield, there's some positional, like double, like McMahon, Drury, Candelario, and Isak, multi-position guys in this range. So yeah, you have some options here, which is a little different than previous rounds per se. So yeah, I'm a fan of this range, and it kind of goes to the previous show where there was a pocket of starting pitchers we liked a lot. So it's kind of like we saw 1 to 150, get some bats, 150 to 200, get some pitchers, 200 to 250, maybe go back to bats. Like, it's a whole flow thing on these things, but we'll see. Let's talk pitchers, Ryan. What are you seeing on the pitcher side of things?
Compared to last week, you've got more, I'll put in air quotes, closers.
Technically you do, yes.
You've got closer specs. You've got Jose Leclerc, Alex Lang, Mason Miller is, I guess the news is he's a multi-inning guy and will not be a closer. So these ATC projections probably aren't reflected in that yet. So I'd take the under on 12 saves. But you've got like Robert Suarez, Carlos Estevez, and Robert Stevenson, who I know we don't cover the news too much draft season wise, but Stevenson is hurt and Estevez is the closer to start the season with the Angels. How long that will that last? I don't know, but you do have more options at closer. But I think they're more speculative. Like, I don't really like the closers going, you know, like Leclerc, Lang. I don't even know if they have the role or are good enough to hold the role. And since we talked about the hitters, the hitter options being pretty decent, these aren't like throwaway darts that were like, if a lot of times you'll hear like, oh, if it doesn't work out, it was a late pick. No, like the opportunity cost for missing on one of these dart throws at closer is Lourdes Gurriel, is your third, fourth outfielder. Like, you do need these picks. So the quantity of closers are there. The quality, I don't know.
Yeah, the closers are there. Hopefully, and we're using 12-team OC ADP, so hopefully you could live with them as an RP2 because you can find a replacement value at some point, hopefully. But you're not warm and fuzzy about it. You prefer these to be a 3, and in a 12, I don't think you'd be taking them as a 3. So hopefully you're kind of going past this direction, unless you just skipped on relievers. But SP-wise, Ryan, there's a lot of guys I've speculated on here. And there's some strikeout upside in this range, which we haven't really, like, to me, when we're getting late in the draft, like 150 plus, to me, strikeout upside. Like, that's, we're not talking 200K guys anymore. Ratios, there's actually better ratios here, it feels like, than we've seen lately. So again, I kind of said, you know, maybe go for positional hitters in this range. This is literally a 200 to 250. It's a great spot to fill holes in the early part of your draft, I should say.
Absolutely. There are a bunch of names. I mean, there's Christopher the Great Sanchez, which we'll talk about. But
man, if he doesn't come through this year, I'm just going to feel really him and Pablo, man. You need to go light a few candles for those two.
I might have to hang them up if those two guys fail. Be tough.
I made a ton of bull claims before. You're just fine. Trust me.
There's just a lot of, yeah, I like the starting pitchers, a good number of the starting pitchers going this range. We'll talk about ADP battles and targets a little bit later, but I think this is definitely like, and this goes back to my overall strategy of wanting to get two closers in that first 150 picks, because you are playing with fire, because, well, A, the last ADP pocket had nobody, no closers outside of Alvarado, in this pocket, there's a very good chance you get like nothing in return and you're passing on starters that we both like and hitters. So it just reinforces my closer strategy. And I kind of like equally the hitters and starting pitchers in this range. There's definitely some names we like.
For sure. Before we get into these names, we like just some shout outs from the crew here. The Knob says big Taylor Ward fan. We will be talking about him later.
The Knob.
Yep. Adam Reckham says pitcher side. I see some upside. If you take a couple starting pitchers early, Sanchez, Savali, Bayo, if he can command better, and Lodolo, if he stays healthy through a bullpen on Thursday. So optimism there. The Knob also says a bit skeptical on Stevenson, even takes over if Estevez struggles. From a team perspective, it makes sense for him to not close, and I'd bet one of the other arms like Soriano, Joyce, etc. And then Mr. Kyle Bland, PLV himself. You say hey. Kikuchi, sneaky good here. Yeah, I've seen Kyle throw out a few graphs and nice-looking PLV charts on one you say Kikuchi these days. So
listen to what Kyle says, not us.
Big brain over there, folks. That's all I got to say. Smart, smart man. All right, let's get into the ADP battles. Dun, dun, dun.
I still can't think of like a good name for this segment, but because we're not really battling, we're just like comparing
debates.
Two dudes.
Debates,
whatever.
ADP debates. All right, who you got in your first one?
This is one. So this is the UT only competition, and it's just interesting. Like I have not drafted either of these two guys, but I think it makes for good conversation. And again, I'm sure listeners out there are probably considering Byron Buxton or Eloy Jimenez going very close to each other. Byron Buxton has an ADP of 206 and Eloy has an ADP of 224. So yes, both UT only, but both of these guys have been second rounders. Both of these guys are young enough where they can, I think, recoup some of that. Byron Buxton is 30 now. But most importantly, both of these guys, at least right now, Bubba, are healthy. And like Byron Buxton played center field yesterday, batted second for the Twins. Like he is healthy at the moment and will play most days, even if it is DH for the Twins. I think I still lean Eloy. I think Eloy could be like if all goes right and he doesn't get hurt, a 260, 270 guy. I think there's 40 home run power with that. And I think most importantly, there's a better chance of Eloy realizing that than Buxton, who I think has a pretty major batting average risk. This didn't get talked enough, I don't think, before Buxton's injuries hit. But like he strikes out a ton, hits a ton of fly balls. The ATC projection on Byron Buxton is 233. So like even if Byron Buxton hits, I don't like it as much as Eloy.
That's fair. Like I'm torn on this one. I've seen myself in some other articles and stuff I worked on. Buxton has been an interest of mine just because he goes so late in drafts in a 12. Like it's now time, okay, to take a chance. Mm-hmm. It's the old thing we said with Chisholm last year. Just let him DH. Like, don't put him in center field, please. Just don't do it. This doesn't end well for anybody. But the thing with Eloy is we were all excited he was going to DH primarily last time, and he still hurt himself and missed all this time. So if the injuries are out there, they're going to find him, both these guys, it feels like. So batting average-wise, Eloy is a big plus, like you mentioned. 100% agree with you on that one. I feel like overall, though, even team context-wise, the Twins are better than the White Sox so much. Like, the gap's bigger than we think.
Yeah.
That Buxton could just, like, help so much in three – like, the runs, RBIs, homers. He says he wants to steal more. We'll see. I don't believe a whole lot of that. Yeah. And then the average, if he could somehow sweep out, like, a 240 to 250, I'm taking chances on Buxton. Have I left many fab leagues with either one of these guys? No.
That's what I was going to ask of you. Yeah.
No, it's been in draft and hold formats only, pretty much, like late in those where you can kind of finagle things. But I have definitely in a 12 team. I've talked about it with some that Buxton might make it on at least one of my OCs just to see where things go at that ADP. But again, we're going to talk about some other players in this range, which I have a lot of shares of. Makes it tough for me to take either one of these guys.
The other interesting part here that I'll just throw in there, I think Buxton actually gets outfield eligibility.
Yes.
Somewhat early in the season, as opposed to Eloy, who I think will just be a statue. DH, maybe pick up outfield eligibility like late in the year, but that's another kind of feather in Buxton's cap, is if you can hold off for a few weeks early on, you probably could stick him at outfield.
Yep, and they need it. They need outfielders in Minnesota.
Yep.
All right, we'll stick with Minnesota here for my first one. Edward Julien versus Brandon Drury. And this is kind of an interesting one to me because Julien was this hot topic. He was a big-time fab guy a couple times last year for some. And, you know, he was leading off, and he shows really good OBP skills, great OBP skills, but decent batting average, some pop, really no steals in the pros. Stole a lot in the minors, though, so that's – I'm not going to give up on that just yet. He's going to be 25 this year. Maybe he sneaks it in there. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's just not that guy. He strikes out a ton, but, like, the profiles have showcased a ton of pull power and this and that. You know, Brandon Drury now, and he's just that boring veteran. He's going to be 31 this year, but back-to-back 20 home run seasons. We first thought it was all about Great American Small Park, went to Anaheim, did it again. Similar batting averages the year before. Like, basically what he did in Anaheim last year, very similar to what we saw in Cincinnati and I believe it was Arizona or or San Diego.
I think San Diego more recently. He's been on a lot of teams.
Yeah. But it's just he basically duplicated it in a bad situation. Let's put it that way. So I'll leave you the floor, but this is an interesting one to me. And the last thing I'll mention before I give you the floor, if you look at King Curlin's MLBplayingtime.com, Julian's a platoon guy where Drury's playing every day. So what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I think it is a little bit of I think Julien has the higher ceiling. I think that power could be really, really nice at second base. And I think with Drury, we kind of know what we're getting, which is a solid floor. But I don't think there's like a big ceiling with Drury. I would prefer Drury. I still, again, at this point in the draft, like I'm not ready to kind of just take wild shots. You still need these guys in your lineup producing, especially in 15 teamers, a little bit less so in 12s. But I'd go Drury. I do think the middle corner dual eligibility for Drury is huge in season. I don't think he's as much of a batting average risk as Julien and may not hit as many home runs, but we'll probably get more plate appearances because, I mean, the Angels are going to play Brandon Drury all they can. So I'd go Drury over Julien, knowing that if I had to hit on like an 80th percentile projection or whatever, like if everything broke right, Edward Julien could be pretty profitable at this price.
Yeah, and back to more on the Julien playing time. Like he's supposed to lead off versus righties, but sit versus lefties. He's got him DHing, which that actually has been kind of the way things have been going. But you'd imagine Buxton will take some of that. So does Drury go play second base? And Willie Castro sit on those games? Like a lot of moving parts in Minnesota these days. I do like Drury. It's one of those things we talk about like with McMahon. It's consistent. Like he's done it. Yep. And it's kind of who he is. I love penciling that in. The knob even says Drury would have more home runs if he didn't get hurt.
Yep.
Sure. So I think he's still there. And this Angels team, if Trout can stay healthy, that'll help a lot. They do lose Shohei, of course. But it's with Chenal, with Neto, with Rengifo, like it's not murderer's row, but it's not as bad as people think. Like if Rendon can figure out he likes to play baseball again, that'll be fun too. All right, who's your next ADP battle?
All right, a lesson in not just taking projections at face value because Lars Nootbaar and Jared Kelnick are very close in projections. Kelnick's projected 242 batting average, 17 homers, 14 steals. Lars Nootbaar, 17 homers, exact same. Not as much speed, 9 steals, a little bit more batting average than Kelnick. I feel like Nootbaar is kind of that more steady player. Kelnick, we know the highs and the lows. So it's just interesting to see two guys, same position, same ADP, with kind of vastly different profiles. I'm taking a shot on Jared Kelnick. I think like the price is finally low enough where this could work. This is amazing to me that Jared Kelnick, he's just 24 years old, man.
Yeah, he's so young still. It's crazy.
You'd think he's like 27, 28 after multiple failures. It is very clear Kelnick did not like the situation he was in Seattle. Kelnick is now in arguably the best lineup in baseball, or probably not even arguably. I take the Braves over the Dodgers. And you just get a fresh start for someone, again, who's still just 24, who has shown in the majors, like we've seen flashes from Kelnick. We've seen flashes from Kelnick as late as last season, had an 846 OPS through May. Like this can work. You get that change of scenery. You get the young, you know, he's still young enough to realize his prospect potential. and the price is low enough to where, like, I think you take the shot here. And I know I'm being somewhat hypocritical saying I like the even keelness, that's a word, of Brandon Drury over Julian. But I just think Jared Kelnick's ceiling is like a third round player. And so that's why I would go for Kelnick here.
Yeah, I lean Kelnick as well. A couple nuggets for Team Japan's Lars Nootbaar. We projected it third against lefties and seventh versus righties. So at least he's in the lineup both days. I know we talked about it on the review shows with Nootbaar. I'm a fan of his overall profile. Injuries just crushed him last year. There's a 20 home run guy with like 10 to 15 steals there. Like there is a productive ball player there with a decent average. Cardinals offense as a whole sucked last year. Do we see that happening 2 years in a row? Maybe it's a possibility, but I think we will see a good year from Nootbaar, barring health, of course. But I am 100% with you on your thoughts on Kelnick, on taking the chance. Like, this is the time of the draft from here on out where you can start taking those chances. And Kelnick is a dude that you mentioned, he could be a third round guy. Like, he could be he could hit 30 home runs. I don't think anybody would be like, wow. Like, yeah, he's got that skill set. Yeah. This could be like I don't know exactly who to compare him to, but yeah, if he goes like 30-15 while hitting 260, that means he'll probably score 90 plus runs and drive in 90 plus RBIs, like on that offense. It's that crazy to do. So I'm with you. Like, if you're going to start taking chances on dudes, this is one of them for sure. So Kelnick for me as well.
We do have a Driveline shout out from Adam in the chat. Adam, I think you're talking, well, actually don't know who you're talking. He went to Driveline before the start of last year. Not sure if that's Kelnick or Newt.
But I think it's Newt, but I could be wrong.
There is the Driveline narrative there. So,
yes, the good old Driveline narrative. All right, I got us one pitching debate here, because, like I said at the beginning of the show, a lot of these pitchers they feel very similar to each other, or there's like pros and cons depending on your builds and what you want to try, and so on and so forth. So I went Reed Detmers versus Yusei Kikuchi, and to me, it's pretty interesting because Detmers had that really strong run where he changed the pitch mix. I'm pretty sure it was a slider. He used a lot more. Things are great. And he kind of regressed a little again. Like, there's a roller coaster with Detmers, but you've seen what could be there. Kikuchi, horrific year 2 years ago, comes back, looks much, much better this last year. As Kyle Bland mentioned earlier, he's sneaky good there. I've seen him, Bland, put some discussions out. Nick's talked about it. Some other guys have talked about it using charts and all these things. Like, there's some pitches he has that are just filthy, like filthy, filthy. It's just a matter of Kikuchi putting it all together. That's always been the problem, because walks have been an issue in his career. So how do you pick between Detmers and Kikuchi?
I like Kikuchi not quite a bit more, but I prefer him. I think the step forward we saw from Kikuchi last year is pretty legit. Like, there was, and I always look for that pitch mix change. Ton more curveballs, missed a ton of bats with that, while also improving the walk rate. And like, workload has been an issue for Kikuchi in the past. Had never thrown more than like 165 innings in a season, through 168 last year, but the skills held up just fine, even improved in the second half. So I think Kikuchi can handle that higher workload. And the last big thing is really like, draft pitchers on good teams. I'm not saying Toronto is going to be like really good, but they're going to be a hell of a lot better than the Angels. And I think your win potential with Kikuchi as well is not huge, but bigger than Reed Detmers. Like, I don't know how many games Reed Detmers or the Angels win in 2024.
That's fair. That's totally fair. I lean Kikuchi as well. It is a roller coaster, and like the knob says, so many bad memories of Kikuchi's first 4 years. He is going to be 33, and the East got tougher, still gives up homers. I do like Detmers, but I lean Kikuchi for the wins. Yeah, Kikuchi showed he could do it last year against the East in an improved pitcher's ballpark. So, and the pitch exchange he made was very, very strong. So,
the last big thing on Detmers is, yeah, that second, because I didn't really talk about him, but that second half slide, man, when you get an 8% drop in K rate and a full mile an hour drop on the fastball velocity and a 3-tick drop in swinging strike, like that's worrisome.
That's why I wanted to bring him up, because Detmers is a popular name and like, hey, this is a late dude that blah, 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 blah. And I see the argument to an extent, but there are some red flags for sure. Adam says Detmers is the guy I bought Velo in spring, and he fell apart late in games. Yep. And Adam mentioned Nootbaar is the Driveline guy. So,
lesson whatever number in not
spring training. You
know, news versus noise in spring training.
Yep, news versus noise. All right. I'm going to go take a lap real quick. We're going to talk targets for a minute. And usually Ryan does this when I talk catchers, but I'm going to let him have his moment here. So who's your first target, Ryan?
Yeah, we talked about those 5-minute breaks in the NFBC auction. I left the show last show when you talked about Ohapi. So yeah, if you want to go do whatever. Christopher Sanchez, like I think everyone who listens to the show at this point, like this is the pitcher I'm trying to leave every draft in if I can. I guess the word is out that I like him. Paul Sporer took him very early in labor because he likes him as well. So that's probably a good thing too. It's just what we saw from Sanchez really all season, but even getting better in the second half with the development of his changeup, a pitch that is one of the best pitches or was one of the best pitches in baseball last year with a 23% swinging strike rate, which is huge. The average on that for a changeup, I think, is like 15%. And it gets ground ball, 70% ground ball rate. Framber Valdezian.
That's a beautiful term you just made there.
Thanks. And he threw that changeup more often, upping the usage from 20 to 33% at the expense of his sinker. So Christopher Sanchez, I will admit, does not have the might. If you look at Christopher Sanchez's minor league numbers and track record, it's not there. I would argue this is a different pitcher than what we saw in the minors. And again, at the price, like this is where you take the shot. I don't, you know, the walk rate was so much better last year. The command was so much better. I don't know if there's like a huge strikeout ceiling with Christopher Sanchez, but you put control with ground balls on a good team and it's still decent ability to miss bats. Like it's all there for Christopher Sanchez.
Yep. What do I have to add? This is your guy. What the hell am I going to say about it? Yeah. So yeah, pretty simple stuff.
There will be no counterpoints taken. Yeah, I will not accept.
Yeah. I'm just not even going to try to be snarky about this and sarcastic. I'm just going to let you have your moment and I'm going to walk away.
The schedule was easy for Sanchez down the stretch last year, people have been saying as well. So, but I don't know. These are still major league hitters, man.
Ooh, the knob says the walk improvements were huge. Otherwise, I'd be getting Patrick Sandoval vibes.
You don't want Patrick Sandoval vibes.
That's a name that is not allowed to be said on this show. Man. All right. Well, speaking of the Angels, my first guy is Taylor Ward. We've kind of talked about him a little bit lately and, you know, we say certain spring news is good, certain not. We talked about Taylor Ward. You get hit in the face with the baseball. I need to see you have, like, your confidence back. He looks like he's getting back to being Taylor Ward, which is a guy that was going a lot higher than this in past seasons for good reasons. Like, after 2022, 23 home runs, 5 steals, .281 average, 73 runs, 65 RBIs. Very formidable. That was, like, in his first full run in the bigs. Last year, 14 homers, .253, 97 games. Again, got hit in the face. Now he's back to being the main outfielder is what I'm going to say, outside of Trucks. I think Trucks is DH. Just don't even mess around anymore, but we'll see how that goes. But you got Taylor Ward, who's going to hit in the middle of the order, fourth or fifth, it looks like most days, just a straight-up left fielder for the Angels. I think he's got 140-plus games in him. Right now, most projection sites have 127, 20-plus homers, .271 average. So a couple things I see there. He's not a batting average drain, which you get as the draft goes on. He's got 20-plus home run power. He's not going to crush you in runs or RBIs. Like, I think if he those numbers I mentioned in 2022, he was hitting, like, first or second. So now he's in the middle of the order, could drive in more runs in this scenario as well. So I think Taylor Ward, to me, is a guy that when we do our review shows, assuming he stays healthy all year, we're talking about a guy that'll be going in the closer to the 125 to 150 range compared to 250 this year, because that's where he was going last year. That's where he was.
No, you're right. So yeah.
I think we're going to be back to that Taylor Ward guy for this year. So these are the kind of guys, like the way Ryan mentioned Kelnick taking chances on. Kelnick is taking a bigger chance than Taylor Ward. I'll agree with that. He's got a higher ceiling than Taylor Ward, 100%. But correct. Taylor Ward, I feel, just once healthy like he should be right now, he brings a great floor to your team at this point in the draft. So I like Taylor Ward quite a bit.
I mean, he's a guy who's done it.
Yep, that's my
2022 line. Yeah, like we have seen it, and we've seen it as recently as 2022, where he did not get hit in the face in July and out for the season. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit at this point, but like it is that, you know, how mentally, how does he react and get back in, and has been playing so far in spring and looking good. That is one where I do kind of look at and see how he's doing in the spring, just because that was such a traumatic injury. Yeah, I think a 230 price for Taylor Ward, I've been grabbing him a bunch. I don't really see why he's that cheap, because you are getting a pretty good batting average power combo with even like a handful of bags in there. He's not going to hurt you anywhere. Plays all the time.
I'd be willing to bet main event season he's going 50 picks higher.
I don't know.
We'll see. The knob does say Alek Manoah ruining seasons in more than one way.
That's right. It was Manoah. That's right. It wasn't Manoah. Yeah.
God. The knob's got the jokes. I'm a fan of this guy. My God, the snarkiness is good over here. And then Ryan Lacero says Angels offense is extremely undervalued this season. Doesn't help their Rendon is stealing headlines. I agree. Somehow, and they're affordable. I'm in.
Maybe I should take back that Detmer's comment about like low wins, but I don't see Trout staying healthy all season. As a whole, I don't see that offense being that great, but there definitely are individual parts to that offense that from a fantasy perspective, we both like. Nominal Luis Rengifo shout out, because we have to do
it. Had to be on the show. Got to get paid for it. They're just one of those teams that they're valued because they're late. If they're going earlier, they wouldn't be providing what we'd want. So
yep.
All right, I like your next pick. He's another kind of boring, steady dude. So who do you got here?
Yeah, this one I really don't understand. Lourdes Gurriel is a guy coming off a 261 season where he hit 24 homers for the Diamondbacks, 82 RBI, 5 steals. Like that's in terms of like dollar value, that's a mid-teens dollar guy going with pretty much, I don't want to say no risk, but like pretty much no risk going at 240. That makes like zero sense to me. The ATC projection has, and maybe it's the projections don't like Gurriel that much. Like ATC projection projects, I can't even get it out. Projects Lourdes Gurriel to only hit 16 home runs. I don't know why. I think he's a 20 plus home run guy, and I don't understand why Lourdes Gurriel is going this late. It makes no sense to me. Like he's going right next to Kerry Carpenter, which like Carpenter might have a little more power, but from a playing time standpoint, batting average, I don't even think it's close.
Nope. I'm 100% with you. Lourdes is on quite a few squads in my world that I'm a big fan of what he can do. Great floor, middle of the order. That D-backs team was not a fluke last year, folks. They're going to keep getting better. There's a lot of young talent that's coming up the pipeline there. Get used to watching D-backs win baseball games for a few years. That's all I'm going to say. So Gurriel's him returning. And the thing is, he was going even cheaper when he was a free agent, and I was hoping Arizona was the return, and very glad that was the landing spot.
Well, he did sign pretty early.
Yeah, but we also started drafting early.
Yeah. Tell us you're addicted to this thing and you draft in November without telling us you're addicted.
I've done about probably 16 or 17 drafts. I'd guess about 8 of them he was still a free agent.
My man signed like before Thanksgiving. You're like, back when he was a free agent, I was getting a value on him.
Yeah, that's me.
That's me too. I'm looping myself into that.
Gialdi says Kerry Carpenter was on a hell of a singer. Yeah, he was. He was. He had a good run. Very, very good run. Great fab pickup as the season went on. All right, my next guy is pretty common. We've talked about him a ton, even on this show. We've talked about Mikel Garcia. If Kevin Hastings is still in the chat, my hat tip goes to you for mentioning this on my Royals team preview on Bench with Bubba. And Kurland doing a few things, listening through the tea leaves, I guess, or reading through the tea leaves, however you want to say that. Mikel Garcia, they want him to lead off. And Kurland has him leading off against lefties and righties on his page. And that skews all the projection monsters' hopes and dreams, because they have him at 131 games and 542 plate appearances. He's going to start every day leading off. He could, let's just say, 150 games. He's probably approaching 650 plus plate appearances, I'm going to say. And that gives him probably 12-ish home runs, 13 maybe. But more importantly, you're talking a dude that's got legit 30 plus stolen base upside leading off up there. Like, he could run wild. We know the Royals have run wild. We saw Witt do it. And then Witt will be hitting behind him, so that means a whole lot of runs scored from Mikel Garcia as well. So this is one of those guys late in the draft, not going to crush you in average. He could provide 10 to 12, 13 home runs, 30 plus steals, 100 runs. I'm going to say 100 runs. Could be crazy because it's the Royals.
Whoa.
But I just love Mikel Garcia. And so do people that were in the fab, the auctions with us. So that's proven. Mikel Garcia, this is one that if you don't take an early third baseman, and this is where I'm trying different things out, like don't, because I have so many Machado Bregmans, try not to do that. Maybe land on Hayes or Mikel. I'm a big fan of those scenarios.
The only thing I'll kind of add, you covered it well, and I fully agree, since I did take Mikel Garcia at $9 in our final listener league auction, is don't sleep on that power. I think a lot of folks see four homers in 515 plate appearances last year from Garcia and think this is like a slap hitter. Like, no, he's not going to hit 20 home runs or whatever, but there's some juice in this bat to where you're not getting like a Nico Hoerner kind of guy. So there's enough power there with the plate appearance boost. If he does stay in the leadoff role for most of the season, I could see 10, 15 homers.
Yep.
So,
and Gialdi says Mikel is an excellent defensive player,
which matters. Matters for playing time.
All right. Who's your third target?
Ooh, Mikel Garcia is almost 14 games at shortstop. I've got my Tout Wars which is 15 games.
If you play Yahoo, he's probably shortstop, third base eligible. So have fun, folks.
Yeah. Nathaniel Lowe, I won't spend too much time on him, but I think again, just a solid one of you we mentioned at the top, batting average is somewhat available at this portion of the draft, which feels kind of weird this late. But Nathaniel Lowe is someone who not only has a good batting average, but a good batting average in a good lineup. We saw this with Jonah Heim last year in Texas. Can really take those kind of hidden categories, runs in RBI, and boost those up even more with like 20 home run power. So if you're kind of waiting on, or not waiting on first base, but like looking to fill your corner, Nathaniel Lowe, just solid, not the highest ceiling in the world, but someone who's going to play every day in a great lineup, have a good batting average and decent power. And I think at ADP of 229, like that seems very cheap to be able to get that. And just another like name late at first base. If you're looking at the position as a whole, you can wait here and end up just fine.
Yep. It's the whole theory is to sometimes cover names, look at stat lines, and at first base, there's so many fun names up top. But if you just literally say, I'm going to screw it and wait on that position and make other positions stronger, it's a strategy to definitely go off of. Like it's definitely a strategy to go off of. Kyle Bland mentions Lowe makes good decisions and a boatload of contacts. So he agrees. And that's one of the metrics that they have over there on the app is like the decisions metrics, and makes sense for a guy that walks as much as he does as well, it seems like.
Yep.
All right. My last guy here. I was just trying to take one for kind of an upside play and kind of a Kelenic way, but Kelenic's a better upside play. I'm not going to say that. But Kyle Harrison, I just want to give him a little shout out because when he got called up, everyone was talking about his walk issues. And yeah, he had walk issues. I'm not going to deny it. But I kept telling people when he got called up that like his last three or four starts in AAA, they were going down. They dropped massively from AAA to the bigs, 16% in AAA to 7.5% at the bigs with a 23.8% K rate, which also dropped. But what I love to see is he threw over 100 innings last year. The development is definitely, he's only going to be 22 for crying out loud. Like, this is just, he got drafted in 2021. The dude's super young. We saw the development's what I wanted to see. And he's coming to camp. And again, a lot of it could be hearsay and whatnot, but he looked good in his first outing. There's a lot of great rumblings from like Logan Webb and other guys that are like watching him and working with him and seeing these kind of things. So it's more of a, like, if you want to speculate on a pitcher, because he's like at the back end of this 250. So he's not like one of the top guys. So if you're going through it, this is like your SP six, maybe five, six, give or take on how you're drafting, and you want to take a chance, he could provide you a ton of strikeouts, which is a category that's just, you need a ton of to begin with, but harder as the draft goes on. And if he can figure it out, he could probably be like a 3.8 ERA guy, maybe, instead of a 4.1. And that plays out phenomenally if he's getting over K per inning, throws 140 innings. Like, this is, it's big boy stuff. And I think he's really close to doing it. If it's not this year, it'll be next year. So I just want to throw out a little shout to Kyle Harrison.
Now you're selling me on it. I just bolded him on my sheet. So
it's just an upside play. It's one of those he could easily drop if he's still throwing walk issues. Like, he's an easy drop compared to some of these other guys on this list at pitcher, where it's just kind of, those are the kind of pitch the upside players I like to take. But
the thing with Harrison, at least in what we saw, it was only 34 innings in the majors last year. He had a league average walk rate and a league average ball rate, which, again, I look at all the time to kind of validate that walk rate. If Kyle Harrison can stay league average in terms of control, he's got the whiffs and the ability to miss bats and the stuff to make that work. And just one last shout out to Chris Blessing, our prospects guy at Baseball HQ. He wrote up Harrison in the Baseball Forecaster, ended it with more ready than some other rookie starting pitchers. And just feel like at 250, that makes sense to go with it.
And a couple of just random things. He had no more than two walks in any game. He threw at least five innings in five out of seven, which I think is good considering people are worried about that. It was one game. He gave it four home runs to the Padres. Other than that, it was pretty steady going, almost quality start type stuff if he went six innings. So I'm just saying there's options for sure.
Yep.
Roger Bloomfield wants to know thoughts on Grissom.
Vaughn Grissom. Yeah, we haven't talked about him going 242. It's funny. This time last year, Vaughn Grissom was like the polarizing guy. Was he gonna play with the Braves? Was he not? If he was gonna play with the Braves, the prevailing thought was this is like a sixth, eighth round pick. I may be exaggerating that a little bit.
But you're not far off.
But I don't think I'm that far off. So it's funny to see now that Vaughn Grissom has a job, is still only 23 years old, people, going at 242. I think it's a fantastic buy. Especially, I'll actually transition this into the fades, unless you have anything to add. But he's going right next to boring Ryan McMahon, who I have listed as a fade with the caveat that we are now shifting into fab leagues and not draft and hold. And I think, especially once you get down to like 250, which is where Ryan McMahon's going, especially right next to Vaughn Grissom, you don't really want Ryan McMahon just kind of there every day, like doing not much. You want to take the shot on a Vaughn Grissom. And if it doesn't work out, you cut and move on. The schedule, I don't think the Rockies get a full home week for quite some time. Yep. And they start on the road, I think, for their first three series, their first 10 games of the season. So, like, again, just thinking from a fab aspect, kind of shift that mindset. Like, in 12-team leagues, I think it's hard to kind of roster Ryan McMahon and just get, like, meh stats. He is someone who I know you were on and I was a fan of in draft and holds because you do need those plate appearances. But I think once you start flipping over to fab leagues, like, take guys with the ceiling. If it doesn't work out, cut and move on.
Question for you then. Why do you like Brandon Drury?
Because I think I think Brandon Drury's like quite a bit better than Ryan McMahon.
Okay. That could be a bet later on. We'll see.
Ooh, McMahon versus Drury?
We'll see. McMahon will steal a few more bags. Drury's got to stay healthy.
It's a good comp.
Both CIMI. Very similar. Very similar. So I'm just curious.
I did not sell you on McMahon.
One thing I'll say with McMahon is yes, DC much better. Fab leagues, OC probably not. I could still see the 15 team appeal because that is just a floor that plays in a 15. So we'll see. Something to talk about later for sure. My first one is pretty cut and dry. I have been anti Carlos Correa for years. I'll give him this much: three straight years of at least 135 games. That's a plus. He hit 230 last year, a career low, 18 home runs, always hurt. He like plays with injuries, doesn't just sit out. You just kind of know what you're getting. He's going to get you maybe 20 home runs, hit you 250, 260. Counting stats are kind of like, it's nothing flashy. Again, similar to what you mentioned with McMahon, like give me something with some upside at this point. And honestly, I hope I'm not taking a shortstop here. So I'm just out on Carlos Correa, because the other part is with Correa, you talk about guys feeling old. He's only 29. Dude's been playing since 2015 at age 20. He's been out here forever. I'm done with Correa.
I'm with you. Gialdi in the chat. Seems like we're due for a Rockies hitter to have a nice year. Who's your pick? I would go Ezekiel Tovar.
Yep, Tovar, baby. 2020 season from Ezekiel Tovar. Bring it.
Next fade for me, Tyler. Let's bring. We haven't brought up catchers yet, man. We gotta.
Because all the good catchers are gone. We talked about all the good catchers are gone. I'm a proud papa. Like they're not even on the board anymore.
Which is why Stevenson for me is the fade. I think if you take Stevenson, like just wait and take, I don't know, someone later, and go take Lourdes Gurriel instead. Like don't waste a pick this quote unquote high on Tyler Stevenson. You have missed the catcher cliff by this point by not taking Luis Camposano at pick 205, where Stevenson's at 234. And I would also, if you're stubborn and want to get a good second catcher, grab Henry Davis, who's going right next to Tyler Stevenson, and just take a third catcher to get you through the first couple weeks of the season. In your last round is what I would rather do than take Tyler Stevenson, who really like hits in a good ballpark, but that's about it. Like he's projected for 12 home runs. There's just nothing there.
He's not who we thought he'd be. I'd rather wait for like Jake Rogers, even Joey Bart. If you're at this point, just say screw it and wait.
Exactly.
Type scenario. The only thing I'm going to mention about Henry Davis, I heard someone else mention it's the reason why I've been off of him this whole time, so I might as well throw it out there. I don't think he's going to get it as fast as people think, the catcher eligibility. They want to play Yasmani Grandal. So It's the Pirates. They play Jacob Stallings forever. This is what they do. It might take like 6 weeks instead of like
two. Dude, you only need 10 games, man.
Yeah, if you play twice a week is five weeks.
Dude, Maybe.
I don't think it's gonna be all as cut and dry simple as people think.
It's too late in the night to debate.
It's at least a month. So just have a backup plan for at least a month. That's all I have to say.
All right.
My next one is Tristan McKenzie Sticks. Love the talent, not loving the health. Let's put it that way. Sticks threw 16 total innings last year. He tried to come back, which is good. He finished on the mound, as people say. But it was less than ideal. He finished with four innings in his last outing. Strikeouts weren't there. It was just a kind of – it didn't leave me all warm and fuzzy, let's put it that way. So I'm just off of McKenzie, full go this year. I need to see him actually be healthy for a season before I can even – with all the other pitchers we talked about here, Tristan just can't go off the board for me at this point in time.
Sixth round pick for me in labor last year, so that hurt.
At least you had unlimited ILs to put him on, so that worked.
Yeah, but he came back and threw.
Yeah, that 10K
I think he walked five too. Or he threw 10K. This was I missed the 10K game. I put him in the following game. I think he walked five or six guys. McKenzie did, and that was it. So I agree on that fade. My last one is Lucas Giolito. So we preach volume on the hitter side. This is a case where volume on the pitcher side is probably not a good thing. Lucas Giolito is projected by ATC. For a 4.60 ERA and a 1.33 WHIP, and you're going to get a lot of innings of that, and you don't want a lot of innings of that. Take Christopher Sanchez instead.
So in reality, this was more of a repeat of we need to draft Sanchez. We don't
basically fade every pitcher going before Sanchez at this point in the draft because
my last one's Alex Lang of the Detroit Tigers. You mentioned there's really not a trustworthy closer here, and I just wanted to mention him because people see 26 saves last year, which is actually really good. He's predicted to get 20 saves because I just don't see a ton of guys in Detroit taking it from him. There could be, there are options per se, but we saw that last year. Lang still got the job. The biggest thing for me though is he's going to crush your ratios. 3.6 ERA last year, 3.41 the year before, 4 the year before that, and the WHIP 1.33, 1.23, 1.49. He had a 15.6% walk rate last year. That is dreadful to any team. So he's just crushing your ratios, and I 100% think he's a fade for me.
Lang or Carlos Estevez? You're sitting at the end of your draft. You need a second closer. You just need saves.
Go Estevez.
I'm going Estevez.
Yeah, at least he had stretches of being pretty good, at least. And then crushing you.
Like, pretty bad, too.
Okay, a couple comments here. Gialdi, Grandel isn't going to make it too long. Davis will be C1 for them by June. Yeah, June. Yes, June. Part of the Grandel thing, I'd bet the entire time Davis was in the minors, the belief I keep seeing was he wasn't good behind the plate. I've heard that as well. We have more comments here. Yes, he's bat first. Okay, this is more Davis Grandal talk. Giolito, there you go. Giolito's ADP is going to rise if there's any form of velo bump. Agreed. Kyle Blands has a 4.60 ERA projection. It's wild. And then Estevez is down 4 miles. The one thing I'm not worried about, is we see it with relievers a ton, the velo thing, and they work their way back up. I even heard Trevor May mention that on Rates and Barrels. Like starters, you want to see it like more consistent velo throughout their starts. I can't remember what reliever pitched on Thursday. He was up 2 miles an hour after his previous outing. You'll see closers do this a lot. Still monitor if it's like, if it's a consistent thing, then be worried, but let's see a few starts with these closers, because Trevor May joked that to be ready for the season, he only needed like, as anywhere like 12 to 15 bullpens, and he'd be ready, where a starter needs like 12 to 15, like good long bullpen slash starts on the mound type thing. So it's a big difference, because they're like, they were talking about like the, like you mentioned last show about Montgomery and those guys, the free agent pitchers, the concern there. He said relievers, we're fine, we could like literally walk in and give us like 2 weeks and pretty much be ready to roll. So
that was the Craig Kimbrel holdout thing as well. That was, they signed him and he was in.
All right, we got a couple listener questions here, so let's fire these bad boys off and then get you on your merry way. That Vols fan 8199 Brandon says, prediction on who will finish higher in the listener league overall, Bubba or Bloom? Like, I think you know what each of us are going to say. So.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I'm currently at a disadvantage because I took Cody Senga in my first league at $22. So I'm already 51-49 in terms of Bubba.
Yep. Gotcha. We'll see how it goes. I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be very fun. And hopefully one of us wins the jersey.
Vols fan was in our I was going to make some UT jokes since I'm a Virginia Tech guy, but Vols fan was in our auction, in my auction last night. So that was, he was having a good time in there. So
nice. Edward Gillis, he writes to us, hi guys, in my last draft, these three outfielders went in the 19th round in a 15 team draft. How would you rank them? Nelson Velasquez, Parker Meadows, Max Kepler.
Jeez.
I go Kepler, Velasquez, Meadows.
I'd go Kepler, probably the same. But those two, I mean, Velasquez and Meadows are polar opposites. Like,
yeah, what do you need?
If you need power or speed, they're close enough to just go with what you need. But yeah. I do think Max Kepler.
Far away.
Where the hell is he on his sheets? He might be outside the top 250. He's really cheap.
This was 19th round in a 15 team, where he's way too cheap. Every year, I can't remember what I wrote. I wrote about it in one of my mock draft things for Fantasy Pros. Every single season, he almost gives you the same line, and he always goes to the end of drafts.
Yeah, we'll talk about him next. We'll talk about him next Thursday for sure. Because
He also asked us to rank Jared Jones, Jackson Job, Jacob Mizorowski. So three prospects.
A lot of J's.
Yes.
I don't know.
The little bit I've looked at, I'll say Mizorowski, Jones, Job, long-term Job, but they've already flat out said that he's not really going to be an impact until at least later this season.
That's good. Agreed.
That's the one thing I will say. I saw those blurbs out there somewhere. And then Adam Reckamp, who's been in the chat with us, says, I'll be tuning in for the Mikel Garcia and Christopher Sanchez love. He knows us.
Oh, we gave the love.
Yes, but he also hope to hear some Aaron Civale love too. Like his upside this year at his price. Thoughts?
I was huge on Civale entering last season, and I mean pitched pretty well, but only 122 innings. That's my thing with Civale is the workload, is the volume. He has not thrown more than 132 in a season over the last 5 years. And so, like, you're not getting the volume. The per inning ratios are probably fine, but the strikeouts, I thought we'd see a bigger bump in K's from Aaron Civale last year, and we just didn't see it with the Rays. A 23% strikeout rate with a swinging strike like right at 10. That's pretty marginal. So I'm fine with Civale. Like, I would take him over Lucas Giolito, for example. But I don't see the ceiling that I saw last year, which again could be fine this late in the draft.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing. And Adam said 29% K rate with Tampa Bay. It was better with Tampa Bay, but and that's one of those things. Like, I'm kind of interested, but at the same time, we got Braxton Garrett, Brian Bello, who I like, Nestor Cortez, I'm interested in. You mentioned Christopher Sanchez, Kikuchi, Kyle Harrison, I guess Cutter Crawford, even. There's so many guys in this range that I kind of trust their strikeout appeal, but Bayo maybe not so much. I'll admit that. But there's a group here I'd rather take a chance on. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. The Rays split is good. I do just worry about Rays and injuries, and you add Savali's health woes on top of that. But yep. I don't know. He could definitely work out here.
Definitely good. And then calling my shot with the last one here. He was in my my auction. He says, I went up for two guys, Logan. He was commenting on your sheet. Logan Webb for $27 and a Hoppy 13 and took advantage of two discounts and Snell at 18 and House on Kim at 12. With zero games played, I feel good about myself. And that's the beauty of the auctions is you might overpay for some, you might underpay for others. Let's see where the dust settles.
Is Blake Snell a discount?
We'll see. I made this
stance a couple days ago with Montgomery, and 2 days later, still hasn't signed. Let's see. See if he signs by Tout Wars.
Yeah, we'll see. It should be interesting to say the least. We need to. I said by the end of the week, so get on it, boys. Get on it quick. We'll see where it goes. But on that note, Mr. Bloomfield, we're gonna head on out of here. So, any final thoughts? As next time we reconvene on this old YouTube venture. You, me, Tout Wars, head-to-head.
It's going to be...
Will be head-to-head. It's not head-to-head league. Let me clarify for people.
Yeah, it's going to be electric. I can't wait. Can't wait. It's going to be like labor, but probably even more fun because because you can't just sit there and drink and...
I can.
...lob insults at me. You can, but you also have to draft a team while you do that. So, good luck.
You've apparently never been to barf drafts. This is my wheelhouse.
I have not.
But yeah, it's going to be a blast. Hope you all tune in. Tell your friends, tell your families. Let's get a big party going. Order some pizzas. I don't care. Do what you got to do. I hope to see the big screen up. I think we will. So make that one happen.
We'll promote it pretty hard. We'll get the YouTube link out ahead of time, and you guys can it's going to be fun.
Kyle Bland challenge accepted. So we'll see you all on Tuesday. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Thanks for listening as always. Ryan's on Twitter at RyanBHQ. The podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 113. Catch you all next time.